Okay.
So welcome everyone. My name is Marion Grogan from Turk. I'm the person whose name you probably recognize from your emails. We're delighted to have you here, and I'm going to turn the phone over right now to Tamara Ledley.
So welcome to the first Clean Pathway webinar for secondary educators. I'm Dr. Tamara Ledley, and I lead the Climate Literacy and Energy Awareness Network Clean Pathway Project. Some of you know that the Clean Pathway Project has been working to develop a collection of educational resources that directly address the climate literacy essential principles of climate science. That collection went live in November with about 90 resources, and while we're continuing to build that collection, we now are working to help you, the educators, more effectively use those resources in the collection. So today's webinar is the first of what will be a series of webinars focused on different resources in the collection. In order to make these webinars as effective as possible, we will appreciate that at the end of the webinar, when you receive the link to the online evaluation survey, that you provide your feedback. So now I'd like to introduce our first webinar speaker. Laura Faye Tenenbaum is an adjunct faculty in the Physical Sciences Department at Glendale Community College in the Los Angeles area. She also works as an education specialist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory as part of the Climate Change Communication Team, which was awarded a 2010 Webby People's Voice Award for Best Web Science Website. So the title of today's webinar is It's a Feast, Climate Resources Galore, NASA's Global Climate Change website. So welcome, Laura. I'm turning it over to you now.
Hi, and hi, everybody. I'm so happy to be doing this, and I feel actually honored to be, you know, one of the first or the first webinar up. So, you know, thank you guys for having me, and also, you know, everybody who's participating. It's actually a really, really wonderful thing on everybody's part, the organizers, the participants. So I'm, you know, kind of proud of this whole deal. And as Tamara said, I am a college professor. I teach freshmen, so that's not all that different from, I think, some of the people who are listening on the webinar who are teaching maybe middle school and high school. You know, it's not that much of a reach. I'm in front of students all the time, and I also am one of the people who creates the website that hopefully you're on. And my goal for today is just, I think sometimes we do on the website, my team, there's four of us, four main members of the team, and we do some analytics on the website, and we know that people are visiting the website. But one of my goals with all of you guys is that, not that you visit the site, and I hope perhaps already you have visited the site a little bit, but that you immerse yourself in it. And that's why I called it, it's a feast, it's a banquet. So I know that people are nibbling at the site. And I guess the point, if I can, you know, in the next kind of 45 minutes, and I know everybody asked to do the muting, but I'm going to end like around a quarter till and open it up for questions, and I do hope that you guys kind of participate and it brings a lot of questions. So I'm inviting you to not only nibble on the website, but to come, it's a buffet, and to feast on it, and to feast on it often. You'll see within I did a PDF and a PowerPoint slideshow, so you can use either, but all of the links are hot linked, so you can have it from now until eternity. The other thing, I'm hoping that you're on the website simultaneously. On my computer, I've got two windows open. I've got the slideshow, and I've also got the website open, so people can kind of touch things and follow along. I will not be able to, in 40 or 45 minutes, deeply go into every aspect of the website, and I kind of did that on purpose because I want you guys to, it's almost like I'm calling you over to say, this is the best banquet you'll ever feast on, you know, come here, and it'll inspire you to go to the website and really dig in deeply into it and also to use it in your classrooms. So if you haven't already bookmarked the URL for the main page, knock yourself out and do that. I've also put on this first slide, I put my name. You guys now have my phone number, my address, and my email address. So you've got that on the main slide, number one. So I'm going to now, without further ado, go to slide number two, which is basically an overview of what I'm going to talk about in this little webinar presentation. So it's just the first slide, or the second slide, I mean, is basically an overview. It's what we decided to do at NASA, because there's so many satellites that are looking at climate change, is instead of making it a mission page, make it a one-stop shop for everything that NASA has on climate. So if you are looking for a resource, NASA resource on climate change, you just have to kind of go to one place. And I've circled in the red bars with giant yellow arrows, like, look here, look here, there's some really amazing stuff. Because I think that what happens when people go on websites, maybe they click on one or two things and go, yeah, 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 whatever, and then they come back. One of the evidence, you'll see if you look on the left sidebar, the evidence page is the most clicked on page that we have. And if you click on it, you'll see that it's just kind of a normal looking web page with some graphics and text. So that's a page that is very frequently looked at. But there's other pages that I've circled here on the slide number 2, key indicators, interactives, images, climate real, tips and tricks page, and we've also got near real-time satellite data in 3D. So those are the places that you really can kind of sink your teeth into in a really, really meaningful way, and we're going to hit on all of those things today. So if you'll click over to slide number 3, at this point, you'll see that this is the key indicators, and these are 5 key indicators of climate change that are measured. And I made a graphic, but if you go to the key indicators page, you'll actually see that page, and you'll see what the 5 key indicators are. So what they are sea level, carbon dioxide, sea surface temperature, I shouldn't have said sea surface temperature. It's global surface temperature, so that's air temperature, sea ice coverage, and land ice. So those are the 5 key indicators. And what that means is, like, if a patient went into the doctor would take their vital signs. They would take their temperature, their heart rate, look at their pupil dilation, all these things, look at their pulse. So we've done the same thing with planet Earth. So these are the key indicators that we look at to tell. And each one has a kind of a series of data. And in fact, recently teachers have asked us to add one more data point, and that should be going live, I would say, by the end of the month. So I'll tell you a little bit about that. If you just look at, like, one key indicator, for example, sea level, we've got ground-based data going back as far as that data exists. So that goes back to the 800s. We've been measuring sea level from buoys and tide gauges and whatnot. So that data is there on a graph. Then on the right, you've got the satellite data. So when the first NASA satellite launched in the 90s, and you've got that data, and it shows you that the sea level's been rising like 3.27 millimeters per year since the satellite has launched. Then there's a couple paragraphs of information. What does that mean? And you'll see that there's also a color graph that you can slide the data. You can slide that bar. So it's kind of that's why they call it an interactive. So there's 5 of these things. And the other thing that I wanted to add that I said that's coming, and probably before the end of the month, a lot of teachers have requested what we call numerical data, because they say that students really like to graph things, and people learn more by graphing and actually having their hands on. Some people call it the real data, but all of this is real data, numerical data, the little ones and zeros on a white piece of paper. So within a few weeks, there's going to be a hot link in the same area as the what does it mean, where you'll be able to click on it and just download near real-time actual numbers for you to plot graphs in your classroom. So one of the things we'd like to do here is we'd like to respond to requests, and that is an example. In fact, you know, me and my supervisor were like, they actually want the numbers. They want just black numbers on a white piece of paper. That looks so boring compared to this amazing-looking slider bar graph. And sure enough, the teacher said, yep, that's what we want. So that's what you guys are hopefully going to get and feast on, in addition to feasting on all this other stuff. Now, what I do in the classroom is I would use this kind of activity for a lab class and ask the students to, you know, to use the slider bars, and I would kind of send them to this page and have them answer questions according, you know, depending on the age level of the student, the grade level, and the type of class. It could be used in oceanography. It can be used in meteorology. It can be used in basic earth science. So depending on the class, and I like to use these types of things for a lab class because it actually asks the students to interact with the website. So I'm going to move on now, that's the key indicators page, to, I think this is slide number 4. And you can get to this by either clicking on the hot link, or if you see, if you look on the left side of the home page, there's all those things, home, key indicators. Then underneath that, if you look down, it says interactives, and there's a flyout. And if you click on that flyout, you come up to this page where it lists, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different interactives right now. So there's a time machine, a sea level viewer, an ice viewer, a series of quizzes, and another interactive about kind of the temperature trends and how hot is the planet. These things I have used in lecture classes as well as in lab classes. So similar in the lab class, you can actually design a lab around any of these interactives, but in a lecture class, I'll actually pull it up and I'll have the cursor because I'm the one, you know, who's lecturing to the front of the class, but the students will say, click on that, or I want to see that, or something like that, or I can kind of drive it. And I use it a lot of times really for two things. Sometimes I'll use it at the beginning of a topic to get people excited because they are, there's a lot of bells and whistles, and these things are beautiful. There's sound with them, there's audio, there's slideshows, they're very interactive, and normally as soon as I show them, it starts a discussion going. The other thing that I use them for is, let's say I wrapped up a topic maybe last week and I want to move on to a different topic, but I want to relate the two topics together and do a little review. So I use these to review. Let's say if I finish something, I'm talking about climate change and I've talked about sea level and now I'm going to talk about ice, and we're going to do a couple lectures on ice. I may pull up the sea level viewer just to do a little review of the topic before moving on to the next topic. So I've used those in the lecture class in both of those ways. And it does get the students, I think sometimes just to get them interested at the beginning is enough because there's, you know, there's a lot and students kind of can get distracted, especially kind of after lunch or all kinds of things. And to just get them to look at the pictures and to feel amazed and then they want to participate, and then we can start getting into kind of more of a lecture type mode. And they're really good for that. So as I said, there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 types of interactives, and you'll see it by clicking on the interactive bar, and you can see the flyout. But we're not going to look at all 5. We're just going to pick one of the interactives and go into that a little bit more deeply. So if you'll go on to slide number 5. You'll see it says the Global Ice Viewer, and I actually wrote the Global Ice Viewer about a year ago, and instead of going through all the interactives, I'm hoping that after this phone call is over, you'll get so excited that you'll just spend an hour or more immersing yourself in this website and really learning, because as you know as well as I do, it's one thing to listen to me talk about it, but another thing to actually interact with it your own self and to start to play and learn. So, you know, you guys, I know you're all teachers, but teachers sometimes often make the best learners, so I'm hoping that you're going to jump in there too. Anyway, so we're going to look at one interactive, and that's the Global Ice Viewer, and if you want, you can actually click it open. If you click on Global Ice Viewer after you pull that out, it'll come up, and there's music with it. I'm just going to turn my music down. So what we decided to do for the Global Ice Viewer is to have 4 different tabs, and each tab depicts a different type of ice. We've got glaciers, we've got Greenland, we've got Arctic, and we've got Antarctica. So instead of it kind of a linear learning style, people could click on any of those 4 tabs at any time. And if I was teaching a class, I wouldn't choose. I would ask the students, okay, what are you dying to look at? You know, what have you never seen before? What really interests you? In lab classes or in smaller groups, sometimes what I've done is I've split the class into four groups, and then each group has to study. So one group will go off and study the glaciers, and another group will go off and study Greenland, another group Antarctic, and another group Arctic, and then each group will have to kind of prepare a presentation to give to the rest of the class. So that's kind of nice, depending on the size of the class. That's one of the ways I've used this in the classroom. Anyway, so let's just pick on a choice. If you pick on, let's say, glaciers, and what we've done is we've collected before and after images of glaciers around the world. So if you click on glaciers, you'll see there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 little flashing dots, and hopefully those flashing dots make you want to click on them. That's the point. You'll notice that if you mouse over the dot without clicking, an image pops up to tell you how many images there are, the title of the area. If there are Rocky Mountains, for example, it says Rocky Mountains, and it says how many images there are. Alaska Range, there's 17 images. So we collected all these images, and they're before and after, all ground-based. No, that's not true. Some are satellite-based images, and some are ground-based images. So should I just take you to my favorite? I presume you guys are following along. If you click on Alaska, you'll see that it has the dates on the top. So the very first one that comes up is 1909 is on the left, and 2005 is on the right. And you can actually see the difference between the two. And people, when we first put this out, everyone was like, well, one's the summer and one's the winter. And we were like, no, if you look down very closely in the text underneath, it gives you the exact date when the photo was taken. So they're all taken within a few weeks. Some of them are actually taken on the exact same day. A number of, like in this example, 96 years later, but not exactly on the same day. So one is taken end of July, one's taken beginning of August. So there's 17 of these, and they're really quite phenomenal. Sometimes I just go through and people, you know, want to talk. And sometimes I think getting students to just become interested and wanting to discuss stuff, you know, is enough, because a lot of times students aren't interested in science that much. And if you get them going on something and get them to realize, wow, you know, I've never been to Alaska, or I've never seen such a thing, or it's even like right now I'm at the Alaska Range, the McCarty Glacier, the same one that I have pulled up on the slide, 1909 and 2004. And it is so beautiful and so amazing. I think in these examples, you can discuss and lecture and talk about climate change as long as you want. And then you see these two images side by side, and your jaw drops open. And I think that's what we were after when we designed this. Still want to take you to my favorite one. So you're clicking through. Here it is. My favorite one is number 13 out of 17. It's the Muir Glacier from 1882. And you can see there's people walking out on that glacier. And this was, to me, the most amazing photo because of the people. But it was also the most difficult to find the match, because you can see there was so much snow and ice there in 1882. And it's really all melted. It's a beautiful lake, but there's no snow and ice there anymore. Again, this one... they didn't give the month, but I put it in there anyway. But you can see it's the same glacier, because if you look in 1882, there's the teeny mountain in the background sticking out, and it's the same mountain on the right-hand side. And normally when I show that to people, that's another kind of jaw-dropping moment. But many of them, you can go back and forth between them, are just amazingly beautiful if you look at number 10 out of 17. And that's 1941 to 2004, the difference. And again, those are both in August. Just mind-numbing how fast those glaciers are retreating. If you look at the 2004 one, you can see that there's a glacier all the way back in the background, and it used to come all the way down. So sometimes just seeing kind of amazes people enough. You'll also see in the slide, slide number 5, I put a red circle and a big yellow arrow. There's an about button on all of those. So there's an about glaciers, about Greenland, about, and it's basically text and information about, not only about the glaciers, but if you look, there'll be information about the satellites, and the satellite information is hot linked to the mission page if people want to look at more. Oftentimes people are like, well, tell us how, you know, which satellite looked at these things and how do we know? So those are all hot linked as well. So if you go back to map, it's there right over the title of the glacier, back to map, and so you'll see it's not just Alaska glaciers, but it's glaciers all around the world, and there are some glaciers in the tropics. You'll see two examples of glaciers in the tropics on high mountains, and then, of course, Himalayas are beautiful as well. Beautiful, but impactful about how much they are melting.
This is John in Petaluma, California.
Hi.
And I took a Alaska trip this last summer and was on a boat. We took the 26 glacier tour up there.
Oh, yeah?
So it was pretty amazing to do that.
Well, I mean, I would be willing to add photos, but the people who went and took these photos, they did it on purpose. They didn't just randomly and accidentally. A group of glaciologists, some of them who I actually got to meet, which was really nice, found these old photos from either late 1800s, early 1900s, and they went back to the exact same longitude and latitude, took the photo with them, and framed the shot on purpose so you could see this. So we just kind of wanted to honor their efforts by making it in a really user-friendly map, because the photos exist elsewhere. Some of them are in collections. Some of them, actually, the photos that came from the Alps are actually in an art exhibit. So I met the artist. That was kind of amazing. But I found that putting it on a map like this, I was hoping would be really user-friendly, so you could actually see and feel and interact with a map to see the glaciers all over the world and the before and after images. So that's how we decided to kind of put it this way. So if you'll go to now slide number 6, I've got just some, each one, I kind of went deeply into the glaciers, but you'll see Greenland, Arctic, and Antarctic. There's a little cartoon of each one, Greenland, Arctic, and Antarctic. So Greenland, when we started looking for images, before and after images of Greenland, we found that there were no images of Greenland anywhere, and I searched before 1979. So people just haven't been to Greenland very much, and in fact, that is still the case. There's not a lot of people who have been to Greenland. So instead of before and after images, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, Greenland and Iceland there. Iceland is the island off to the right, the smaller one. There are 6 videos, and these are time-lapse videos, so you can actually see the glaciers moving. They're shot by Extreme Ice Survey, and they are amazing. If you're just going to look, there's 6 of them. I like to show all 6 in class. This is one of those things that just gets students talking like jaw-dropping. Wow. Because I think sometimes the problem when you discuss climate change is people give the thing like, okay, whatever, the climate's changing, like next, you know, let's pimp my ride or talk about cribs, or they don't care. And I think sometimes when you show them something that's really dynamic and mind-boggling and beautiful all at the same time, it's like there's this instant investment. And that's what these videos do when I show them in class. So you'll see that there's one called Store Glacier Calving. And they were just lucky enough to set their cameras up right when a glacier calves. And there's a cartoon of the U.S. Capitol building. I guess they just laid it right on top of the image for, 3 seconds or something, and the cartoon goes away, and you see the glacier calves. And the glacier is, like, so much bigger than the U.S. Capitol building. And it is kind of mind-boggling, and you get this kind of visceral impact. I was talking to a scientist who has seen many glaciers calve, and he was saying to me, why is there no audio? And I said, well, they've kind of put these cameras up there. They don't put microphones as well. And he was telling me the story about watching a glacier calve, and it's not just a visual thing. He said it was so loud that the vibrations like hit you in your solar plexus and it moves your whole body. So I've heard that. I've not seen a glacier calving, but I've heard that story, so you can kind of pass that story on to your students as well when they're watching the thing. You could tell them the story about the vibration and the noise that it makes. Impacts you in this hugely visceral way. So there's six videos, and then you'll see there's a white bar down there that says video about Greenland ice melt. So that's a video that we made here in-house. It's a NASA animation, and then we wrote a script and narrated a soundtrack over the top of it. So it's just a little video that talks about, you know, what happens when the ice melts and, you know, some of the impacts of climate change on that. So then you'll go to the Arctic button. Remember, this is just one interactive, and there's five of these puppies. So I'm hoping that people take these into their classrooms and write an entire like learning module or a day of activities around each of these is kind of what I would recommend if I was suggesting to someone who was wanting material to teach climate change course. So for this one, there's just two white bars. One is a movie, and the other one discusses the Northwest Passage and how that's opened up because we've lost sea ice in the north. And then if you go to the – and all of these, remember, have a about button. If you go to Antarctica, what you'll see is – and again, one of the most amazing things about Antarctica is you don't see it usually. We look at maps, and Antarctica is cut and stretched out, and it's in this really weird shape. So even looking at Antarctica, this is a radar satellite image that we're looking at now, kind of like, wow, I've never even seen it before in its whole shape. And one of the things I like the most is a listing of the ice shelves, and there's a discussion about what is an ice shelf. So there's different kinds of ice, right? Glaciers, ice on Greenland, sea ice, which is frozen seawater, and then there's ice shelves, and the ice shelves are what we're losing in Antarctica. Antarctica is surrounded by ice shelves, and they all have names. And then you can go back to the map, and you'll see those two red dots. And when the ice shelves broke off, the satellites captured it. So you see a time series, and you click that, and it shows you this major ice shelf just breaking apart in a number of days, or sometimes it took a couple of weeks. And these are ice shelves that have been stable for like hundreds of thousands of years, and then all of a sudden they're gone in a week. And then there's an ice flow map, which was created by a scientist here at JPL, that shows you how fast we're losing the ice shelves. So the purple color is moving quickly, and the blue color is moving slowly, but they're moving. So the ice shelves kind of break out and then or break up and then flow out to sea is what's happening to the ice shelves in Antarctica. So as I said, I just took you deeply, kind of deeply, into one interactive. Each one has an about that hot links to the satellites that study it with articles. And I've actually had students who wanted to write a paper and written a paper kind of based on some of this information or interacted with it, done some questions and answers. So there's, you know, a variety of ways to use these puppies in the classroom, and I'm hoping that people do because students like it. Okay, so now we're moving on to another topic, and that is what's called images of change. And you can get to it by, again, clicking on the hot link here, or you'll find it if you are on the home page. If you just look down on the left, it's called images of change. Okay? And I just gave you one example. Similar to the before and after images of glaciers that I showed you on the ice interactive, this one is all kinds of images of change. So you've got deforestation before and after from satellite, and these are, I believe, most of them are satellite images. So there's one or two put up every week. So right at the front, you'll see this is the image that was put up in the last couple of days. But then when you slide down, there's, I think as of the last report I heard, there were 57 images of change. So these are image pairs. And you'll see that, like, for example, a lake is shrinking. That's because of, in some areas of the planet, increases in temperature are causing increased desertification. So the deserts are growing, and there'll be a lake that's shrinking because the desert is growing. Then you'll see deforestation is next to it. Then there's some example of glaciers. We also put up things such as the tsunami. You'll see the before and after, and those are just in a matter of days, the differences. Other things that are up there also are expansion of cities. So that is related to climate change, as the population grows, as cities expand, that relates to deforestation. There's also like stuff like century of warming. You'll see before and after carbon dioxide. These may someday soon. We're waiting till there is enough to do this to put it into categories. I think the list of categories is right up there at the top. So. Let's see, there's urbanization, natural hazards, fires, floods, and other issues. So we're going to kind of, I don't know, look for it in the next sort of month to 2 months, be categorized. So right now, they're just all there, and you kind of have to mouse over them. If you click on it, it opens up into a light box, and you see the before and after. So what I've done in class with these, mostly I've used these, like, breaking students into groups, and then the students have to kind of make lists. What are the differences between the two? What are the causes of the differences? What are the impacts of the differences? Make some suggestions. So I'll have, it's not really a paper that students write, but more like a list of topics that they discuss, and then they can either turn it in, or they can either discuss it in groups, or they can either give it as presentations. So that's ways I've used these in class. Occasionally, I'll pop these up in a lecture, but I've used this more as either an assignment or a lab class. I've used these. And it does, I mean, the example that I gave just in the slideshow, in the PowerPoint slideshow, you can see a flood. So that, if you remember, there was a big flood in Pakistan about a year ago, less than a year ago, where there was a big flood, and so you can see it from space, and you can have the students talk about before and after images left to right. The other thing is every time you open up one of these light boxes, there's a discussion, well, about a paragraph, and the discussion explains what you're seeing in the image. It also tells you which instrument took it and how the instrument was taken, and then maybe a sentence or two just explaining, you know, what that means. The other thing is that you can, all the images are downloadable, so you can click them and download them onto your computer if you want to just either have them or use them in a slideshow or do whatever you want with them. They're downloadable for you or anybody else. So I think we're ready to move on to the next topic. So the next topic is Climate Real. I'm on slide 8 at the moment, and you can also get to Climate Real. It is actually on the main page right underneath Images of Change. And Climate Real is basically every NASA-made video that talks about climate, and there's many of them. If you didn't know, there's 10 NASA centers, and many of the NASA centers create video. We create video. I personally made 3 of them, and I'm in the process of making a 4th one that's on this Climate Reel. So it's just a way to, instead of like searching 20 or 30 different NASA websites, you just have to go to the one website, and you'll see that the if you're on Climate Reel or if you're on the my slideshow, you can still see the same thing. Right at the top, I put the top 10 videos, and then I've broken it up into water, atmosphere, frozen places, and life. And each video, this was a suggestion that was made by somebody at the Climate Literacy. They asked me to put how long the video is. So they're all short. I mean, the longest one, I think, is about 7 minutes. And I do the same thing with the videos in my classes as I do with some of the interactives, and that is I'll show them at the beginning of class. In fact, when I first started, this is a true story, when I first started showing videos in class, I used to have students who, because I teach at college, I don't know if this is the same middle school and high school, but students would come late. And when I first started showing videos in class, people started showing up on time. And that showed me that they wanted to see the videos because they would come on time to class. So that was kind of one of the reasons that I started becoming really a liker of videos, because it pulled the students in on time. And now, the other thing that makes me know that students like videos is sometimes they want to see it a second time. You know, if I've shown the video and people are like, oh, show it again, that's a real good clue that they're engaged. So that I would say that that's common. People ask for it a second time. The other reason that I know that these videos are helping is that I see it in their exam answers, especially essay questions. So I would have an essay question on an exam, and a student would write, like in the video that we saw, and they would actually, you know, answer the question correctly. So I've had just some anecdotal results from using these videos in class. Again, I show them at the beginning of class, either to set up a conversation about a topic that I'm going to discuss, or to review a topic that I discussed, let's say, a week ago, and we'll kind of review that and then move on. I guess I'll tell you the ones that I personally wrote are Majestic Planet, Frozen Earth, and Earth the Water Planet. So I personally made those. But there's many on here, and they cover lots of different topics. Everything you ever wanted to know about climate change, hopefully, is up here on Climate Reel. And if it isn't, then it should be. The other thing, too, that's on here, I should say, is if you go all the way to the bottom of Climate Reel, you'll see that they are not videos anymore. They're animations. They're all kind of cartoon animations. And the useful thing about these is that students can make their own videos. So, you know, it used to be like, how do you make a video? Now everybody wants to make a video, and many people have a camera, even just on their phone. So you can download these animations, and the students can, most computers now, or at least most Mac computers, I'm a Mac person, they have iMovie, and you can pull those right into iMovie, get the microphone that's right on your computer, and you can have the students make videos. I've been really successful in classes asking students to make videos, and they get really excited about participating and making something that's their own. And I've heard that I'm not the only one doing this, that it seems to be a trend now that both teachers as well as students are really enjoying making videos. So, in fact, one of the things I'm hoping to do is get like a how to make a NASA video cheat sheet and put all these animations and like the best place to find NASA images for making videos. So that is one of the goals that I have for this year. And again, in my experience, students just eat that stuff up like crazy. So the next slide, this is slide 9, is a little document that I created about a year ago called Tips and Tricks for Teachers, and I just put the first page up here, but it's under the For Educators button. If you go to the For Educators button, there's a flyout again, and it says Tips and Tricks for Teachers, and if you go to that page, it lists the science standards, and then you could just click on that document and it downloads as a PDF, and everything in the PDF is hot linked. So you could actually use the PDF online or you could print it out in your class. And I guess I wrote it for somebody like me, because I'm both a creator and an end user, and I find that when I was wanting to use materials in class, I kind of wanted other people's materials, but I wanted to put my own fingerprint on it. So that's why I created this. It gives you some goals, or I'll back up. There's 6 topics. There's the climate time machine, the sea level viewer, images of change, the ice viewer, climate reel, and the eyes on the earth 3D. So those are kind of my favorite things to use in classes. And for each of the 6 topics, I put a goal and an outcome and kind of a things to do list, so how to use it in your class. But then I also put options, because I know that teachers kind of like to put their own fingerprint on everything, or many of them do. I'm not the only one. So I put kind of different suggestions and options to make it your own in your own classroom. And again, this is a 3-page, 6-topic downloadable document, so hopefully you guys will find that useful. And again, part of the reason that I find it so easy to use the website in my classroom is I'm really, really familiar with the website. So I wouldn't expect that other people would be as familiar with the website as I am. So it's kind of like a helpful cheat sheet for, you know, navigating the website in the classroom, you know, without having to be the one who designed the website. The other thing is, while I'm on this For Educators flyout, this is not in the slideshow, but you'll see that the tips and tricks is first. Then there's the Educator Resource Collection, which basically just has, it used to have a much longer collection, but I shortened it because I found that the Climate Literacy and Energy Awareness Network was doing a better job of collecting the resources than I ever could in a million years. So what I did was just kind of, if you want to find a great collection of resources, go there. And then there's also it's kind of a sister website at Langley with global climate change education as their main thrust. And then you guys have probably heard of DELEASE. And then because we here at the Global Climate Change website, we have a solutions page, but that's not our main area is energy. So that's kind of the other side of climate is energy solutions. So we just linked everybody directly to the DOE, which has some excellent lesson plans. So please feel free to, you know, help yourself to all of those things. But in my opinion, that was kind of the best of. So then I just want to go on. We're going to hopefully be finishing up in the next 5 or 10 minutes. So this is kind of my goal, and I know you guys are hearing me, but if you see slide 10, that's me. So that's what I look like. My hair's a little shorter now, but it's pretty much me. And you can see that I am using the stuff in the classroom. That's the lecture. And basically, I've found that it does cause students stop texting and they wake up and they get interested. So that's kind of the biggest boon for me, at least so far, is once they're engaged, then they want to listen. So I know you guys probably know a lot about climate change, but the hardest thing is to get the students engaged in the first place. So that's kind of what I've been using this material for mostly. And then you can see we have a lab with a bunch of laptops, and the students share the laptops. So I usually put two students per laptop. The reason why isn't because sometimes we have more laptops than that, but I like to have students interacting. And sometimes they even forget they're learning because they kind of feel like they're playing a game, as a lot of the interactives and the graphics are kind of fun and game-like. So then the last thing I want to tell you about is this Eyes on the Earth 3D. And I know from the home page I've been having you more or less go down the left-hand bar to get there. But to get to the Eyes on the Earth 3D, it's actually on the other side, on the right-hand side. And it says Eyes on the Earth 3D, fly alongside NASA satellites in 3D. Now, if you click on that, you will get to a welcome page. And there's a video that you can watch, and then it says enter, or it says download. So you have to download the Unity 3 player, and it's a pretty quick download. If you are doing this at a school, you'll have to download it on the school computer. So I just came kind of like the day before and downloaded it on all those laptops. It didn't take very long at all. It takes just a couple of minutes to download this Unity player, and it allows you to see it in three dimensions, the data. Actually, if you don't download it, you can't see it at all. So it's really pretty cool. There's near real-time data, and I'm just going to list to you. There's about 13 satellites that are Earth satellites that are NASA satellites orbiting planet Earth. June 9th, there's going to be a 14th one that launches looking at sea surface salinity. So you see them all on the main page when you download the Unity player and then go on Eyes 3D, you'll see them all. Not all of them have data sets. If you look on slide 11, you'll see the main window when you go into Eyes 3D. You'll see them all, and they're going to be in real time. So the satellites are zooming around the planet in real time and in real location. So I've kind of made a list of the data right there on slide 11. So Aqua satellite has data. JASON 2, which is also called OSTM, it kind of has two names. I know that confuses people, but OSTM stands for Ocean Surface Topography Mission. It's also called JASON 2. That has sea level data, and that's the colored one that you see looking at sea surface height, and you can see the blue is highlighted. That means I clicked on OSTM, which is also called JASON 2. Then MODIS gives you ice cover. GRACE gives you gravity maps, and the CloudSat, basically it says vertical cloud structure, but that's a fancy way of saying it shows hurricanes, and they're really cool. So those are the five satellites that there is data available now. And what you would do is you would click either on the satellite itself as it's zooming around the planet, you catch it with your mouse, or you can just click on the bar above hand and it opens up. And then on the right-hand side, you'll pull down. You can put in the exact dates of the data you want. And you can also, the really cool thing about this is you can manipulate, similar to Google Earth, where you can manipulate the globe. So I can put my cursor on planet Earth and I can spin it and angle angle it and zoom in and zoom out, and you can see information about the satellite. If you click on about the satellite, it'll take you to that page, the mission page. I'm going to go over to slide 12, and you'll just see some examples of what the data looks like. So there's a CO2 data, gravity data. What you can learn from gravity data is you can see, for example, there's a giant negative data hole where Greenland is, and it just never goes away. So you can see Greenland melting, and you can also get air temperature. So all of them are near real time. All of them are clickable, spinnable, zoomable, and they're all interactive. And again, with this thing, you kind of have to learn how to drive it. It's very similar, I've been told, to a video game, and the reason why I say I've been told is because I've never played a video game, unless you call this a video game. But I've been told by students and video game players that it's similar to a video game in the playing sense. But in the learning how to use it sense, I think it's also similar to a video game, is you have to play with it. I'll say one other thing about Eyes on the Earth 3D, and that is we are coming out with the Eyes on the Earth 3D 2.0 version. I know not the exact date, but I expect it to be, let's say, in the next 2 months. And the reason, well, there's probably more than one reason we're coming out. We're going to get new data, a whole bunch of reasons. But can you see just from slide number 11, or if you've got that particular window opened on your computer, also the Eyes on the Earth 3D window, you've got controls on the left, on the top, on the right, and on the bottom. So the speed is controlled on the bottom. The data choice is controlled on the right. The satellite choice is controlled on the top. And then on the left, there you can choose the dates on the left, and then you can also zoom in. You can put relief on there. You can turn the light on. And what that means is half the planet is in dark and half the planet is in light, depending on where the sun is, and it's in real time. So if you want to see light all around the Earth, if you want to, you know, put the sun everywhere, you turn on the light. And people kind of said it's because the controls are on the top, the left, the bottom, and the right, it's confusing. So in the new version that's coming out, all the controls are going to be on the left, and it'll be a little bit more intuitive. So now you know that there's a new version. But you know that there's a lot of data out here and lots of ways to use it. I have used this more of a demo in class than a ask the students to go and find the data. That's how I personally used it. But I'm really hoping, this is new. I mean, this Eyes on the Earth 3D is probably a year old. And I'm hoping it gets wildly popular and wildly used. As you can see just from the photos of it, it's beautiful. And then the last slide is what's next. We should launch our first learning module, hopefully in the next 2 weeks. I've given the Word document and the graphics to the HTML people. So we're going to have a learning module up there, which will be a learning module unlike the tips and tricks, which are kind of like ideas for you to turn into a class. This will be a proper learning module for teachers. Then we are launching a weekly newsletter, and I will have an email that goes out inviting everybody who I have their email or lots of listservs. If you'd like to get a weekly newsletter from our website, please sign up. We already have that MetaSite for educational resources. We are planning a new Earth Science Climate Science video series that's in the works. And remember I said there were five interactives. This one will be the sixth, the greenhouse gas interactive, and that's in its planning stages now. So I had meant to end at about 4:45, or I should say a quarter till, and I'm 2 minutes over, which isn't too bad. So at this point, I think I would like to open it up and people can turn off their mute buttons. And normally, teachers are the best question askers ever. So I'd just like to kind of thank you for being quiet for so long. And now speak.
Well done.
Thank you very much, Laura.
Thank you.
So are there any questions?
Or comments. It doesn't have to be a question.
You can ask about other aspects of the site if...
yeah, I kind of just did a quick kind of run over of my favorite spots, but of course there's other parts of the website as well.
This is John.
Hi.
Hi, and a question for you. When running these in the classrooms, because we're in schools that don't have the nice big fat D4 lines coming in, Have you run into any problems with, from anybody that when viewing these pictures and slides in 3Ds of overrunning? Because I've had from our biology teachers, they say when they run videos streaming, like for their animations of their dissections, they get really bogged down in the afternoons, and it takes them like twice or three times as long to go through the stuff. Have you had any problems with that so far with the set?
I have not had problems with this website. I'll tell you a story. You saw the picture of me in the classroom, right? And then that was a picture of my students in the lab class. I remember when, this was before our website came out, remember when Google Earth launched Google Ocean?
Yep.
So I had my students go on Google Ocean. I crashed the entire server for the entire college on Google Ocean. So the whole server went down because of me and my class, and it was the first day of school. So, yeah, I've had that happen. But with this website, I have not. I think part of the reason, if you look, for example, if you play one of the videos on Climate Reel, they're pretty small, and we did that kind of on purpose. They're, I think, 360 by, the exact dimensions. They're like, here, I can tell you the exact dimensions. They are 640 by 360, the size of a typical video, which is like 100, is it, what's an MB, a millibyte or a megabyte?
Megabyte.
So they're not necessarily huge files. So I have not had a problem with these running too badly. One time, or maybe more than once, with the Global Ice Viewer on those extreme ice surveys, time-lapse videos, I've had a lag on those a little bit, but not too bad, because those when they gave me those files, I couldn't play them on my computer, and I was like, why can't I play these files on my computer? And I took them to the young guy down the hall, and he said, they sent you IMAX size. So we shrunk them. So if anybody has an IMAX theater at their college, I've got IMAX size videos. So they're amazing. Can you imagine seeing that stuff on the IMAX? Wow. But yeah, so they're way shrunk down to get it on the website. But you know, we kind of took that into consideration when we first, when we first created it to kind of make it really user friendly in that regard. But you know, you've got my email if you are having problems. The other thing you can do is almost everything on our site is downloadable. So if you wanted to, you could pre-download it onto your own computer or onto the kind of college computer in the room, and then you're not streaming it off the Internet at all. You're just playing it onto your computer. So as I said, all those image pairs are downloadable. I think like the quizzes and the interactives, you can't really download them. But the videos, you can all download them and have them on your own computer to play off your computer instead of off the Internet. What else? Oh, with the Eyes on the Earth 3D, you can actually make movies of an event. Let's say you wanted to. I've made a movie, for example, in California. We had a really heinous heat wave last summer. So I caught it on Eyes on the Earth 3D, downloaded it, and exported it as a little movie, and you can play it. So I mean, it helps if you like the computer, but I think that's true in general in 2011. If you want to have fun with graphics on a computer, you know, it helps to, you know, the more computer skills you have, the better you will be.
Now, on Eyes on the Earth, it seems to be current data that's being streamed to us.
Yeah.
In the last few days, is there like archives of events or something that we can go to for certain things that might be happening, such as the Bangladesh flood? Are you going to archive that stuff?
Yes, so that was one of the requests. We're going to have, I don't remember what the bar is going to be called, but it's going to be called like events or something like that. I don't know if it'll be called current events, but there'll be a list of archived events. But also, if you look, which data set are you looking at?
I was looking at Eyes on the Earth. I was just looking at your slide and seeing.
Slide. Okay. So I was going to say, damn, if you already figured out how to download the data, I'm impressed. Because it does take a minute to, have you ever played a video game?
Not really, not the fancy
ones. Okay, so you're like me? Yay, a big dork like me. All right, so I think what I've been told about video games, and it's true for this Eyes on the Earth 3D, you have to play with it for like 10, 15 minutes, and then you get used to it. So anyway, as far as the data goes, can you find an event? There is, when you go onto the controls, there is a place that says choose dates. So not every satellite has every archived data back to the beginning of time, but you can see, you can just click through and see which dates are available, if that makes any sense. So the most information is on the Aqua satellite. That I can just tell you. It has the most data, and it's the AIRS instrument on the Aqua satellite. And that's the one with the temperature. So if you look at the dates, I can just tell you, it goes back. I'm just scrolling back. It goes back through March 2010, which is probably when the site was launched.
Hi,
so it doesn't go that far back. I mean, it don't goes to forever, but go on.
This is Peter. I'm in Rhode Island.
Hi.
I just went on the teacher toolbox. And there's actually a place to download data sets along with archives on the teacher toolbox. And there's a whole set of data that's available that you would probably have to search through to find data from for a particular event. But at least it would be there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I thank you for sharing that with me and the rest of the group. So I think that's one of the nice things, and you guys are proving me right now that you've taken your mute buttons off, is that I feel like if I give teachers something, then instead of giving you, like, forcing it at you, you're able to almost, like, make more of it than I could give you if I forced it at you. You know, because teachers are those kinds of people. They want to, like, participate and find things out on their own and search for stuff. So thank you for proving me right about that. Any other comments or questions?
So if we, as a teacher, start developing this, worksheets or something to look at this material so that we can assess how they're doing or get some feedback from them. Do you want us to send you our worksheets for that so you can post them somewhere so we can share those?
You know, I think that would be nice. You know, one of the things I've actually thought about doing, and I can't even remember who was proposing this, is to do some kind of a workshop where everybody's there in person and people can break out, create workshops. Let's say all the people who are teaching 8th grade, you know, general earth science class get together and make a couple worksheets, and then everyone could share them. And Tamara may be better for answering that question, but I think it would be fantastic to have a forum where teachers who create worksheets and things like that can share them, and then other teachers can share them, and people can all get feedback. And it's in the works. I know that some fantastic group is already starting to do that, but absolutely, it's a fantastic idea. Tamara?
We have a couple of venues. We don't have anything directly right now with respect to the Clean Pathway Portal, but we will be, I think, exploring for future efforts, trying to make things more customizable. One venue that we do have that we could post teacher worksheets or materials, and this is an idea, Laura, where when you were showing the pairs of satellite pictures, the faces of change, I think it was.
Uh-huh, images of change. Uh-huh.
Images of change. We have an Earth Exploration Toolbook chapter, and this is an online resource that provides step-by-step instructions on how to access an online data set, an analysis tool, and conduct an analysis. And one of them uses those kinds of images and allows you to use image processing software to take measurements on the images. And our particular chapter focuses on those Aral Sea images. I don't know if anybody else, I noticed them because I know we have an Earth Exploration Toolbook chapter, but you can use the same techniques for different ones of those images. We could go in, and then there's a section of the Earth Exploration Toolbook chapter which just indicates going further, where we could indicate a link to your images.
See, that would be amazing.
Somebody
and people
could download and use the same techniques to that they use in the chapter we have to use it on other images. And then potentially, if teachers really had refined their results, we could post those things with along with those links.
See, that would be fantastic, because then people could actually, let's say, estimate, you know, how much and come up with some that's what you're talking about. There's a way to measure it. Because right now it's just a visual.
Yeah,
you know.
So what we have is we have an Earth Exploration Toolbook chapter that takes the pairs of images of the Aral Sea, and this is a sea in Russia which was, the water was diverted for irrigation, so the sea shrank.
Mm-hmm.
And the chapter shows teachers how to use image processing software to measure the change of the area and the linear distances across the lake changes over time between two different images, for, you know, in different times. So you can use the same techniques on some of those images with respect to changes in urban areas and measure the area or distance across the urban area and how that changed over time in miles or kilometers or square miles and square kilometers.
That would be so useful. And I do see the RLC is the second from the bottom all the way to the left. There's three images.
Yeah. So we actually only use two of the images in the Earth Exploration Toolbook chapter. So
the last one is 2009, so if it was made before that, that's probably why.
Yeah, that was one of the early ones. So, yeah, it was made earlier.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many resources that are just starting to come out. I mean, this website's, like, less than a year and a half old. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, at some point, they'll be, you know, kind of cross-referenced, and the different websites will start to interact. I mean, they are already starting to interact, but even more so. So, yeah, that would be one way that would be really, really useful, I think, for teachers and students alike. It's 5 o'clock right now. Is there kind of one last question, or did you guys want to wrap up?
Thank you.
If we can take one more question. Are there any others? Well, if not, thank you very much, Laura, for presenting all this material to everyone. Thanks all for the participants for participating in this, and you have our email addresses if you have further questions, and we hope to involve you in future webinars.
Everybody, all of you.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
We'll be sending you a follow-up email, perhaps even this evening.
Cool.
Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it. And you've got, now everybody's got all my information, so thank you so much.
Have a nice
evening.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
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 Okay.
Bye.
Bye.